Stream Netflix.
Okay. Check.
One, two.
Okay. Okay. All right.
Bang it.
Ready? Hello, and welcome to the Should I Go See It podcast, where every other Friday we take a deeper dive into the one-sentence reviews on shouldigoseeit.com. This week we'll be discussing Novocaine and Black Bag. I'm your host, Bill George. With me today, as always, AJ Rebecca and super producer Craig Stanton. Gentlemen,
hello.
Hello, Craig and Bill. My brain just shut up.
How's everyone doing?
I'm doing well. The glitch there for a sec.
I know. My God. I'm doing well. How are you?
Doing well as well.
That's fantastic. Bill, I pulled my my first all-nighter in a while because of work.
Oh, boy. You must be hurting.
Yeah. Yep. Well, the baby was sick all last week. Double ear infection. Miserable. We didn't sleep for like 4 days straight. He wasn't in daycare. It was survival mode. And then everything kind of caught up. Mm-hmm. And I looked myself in the mirror and I said, you're going to fucking work all night to get caught up. So me and my good friend Diet Pepsi with a co-assist from Zin, we did the damn thing. And let me tell you, not in college anymore.
Yeah, I'm sure you're feeling that one.
Yeah, well, college was Red Bulls and Parliaments. So I know, I think I did it for the better. So yeah,
I graduated somewhat.
But your body... My body did not bounce back like it used to.
Yeah, so you did the overnight to get caught up, and then you probably lost 3 days of productivity in the aftermath.
Well, at that point, no, you have to will yourself. You got to say, like, listen, you're in it. You're in it for the long haul. Nothing can slow you down.
Yeah, you got to.
Good thing this is not a video podcast, because it looks like I crawled out of the worst dumpster behind the worst Wendy's in Rockland, Massachusetts. Speaking of Wendy's in Rockland, Craig, how was your day today?
Yes, fantastic. I ordered 2 junior bacon cheeseburgers from an AI chatbot and came out smelling like roses.
Wow. What a time to be alive.
What's new?
It was a beautiful day. Beautiful day for a little drive-through. That's what you're missing. You're sleeping through, you know, you're working overnight. You're missing out on the weather turn there, AJ.
Back to the Wendy's real quick. Shout out me for not getting a Frosty.
Sure.
That I feel like we just moved right past that and, you know... Good job by me.
Okay.
Look, I mean, I don't like to use the word hero a lot, but
I think it was brave.
You're close.
I think I deserve credit.
Did you get fries or anything to drink?
No. No.
You just dry guyed 2 burgers as is?
Wow.
Well, actually, now that you mentioned, I had stopped at the Dunkin' Donuts just before it and got a coffee. So I had a coffee. And then I was continuing driving and I was like, oh, there is a Wendy's right there. And so I hit the Wendy's. Double drive-thrus within like a quarter of a mile of each other.
No fries with a burger is psychotic to me.
No fries, no drink. This whole enterprise costs like $4.50. I'm out. 2 junior bacon cheeseburgers, deuces.
And you just...
The drink you could take or leave, but the fries are a must.
But not on you drive. I got a whole Dunk's coffee right here. What do you think? I got a bladder made of fucking steel. Oh, can't be doing double drinks out here.
And you washed it down with just a medium iced 1-in-1?
Well, minus the sugar. Come on.
I would be ripping off the nearest towel rack at a Shell station if I did what you just did.
Jesus Christ.
That's so gross.
It's like you know how like when you fly a plane low enough, like it doesn't show up on the radar systems? That's what it's like just getting 2 things off the dollar menu. It like doesn't register.
Doesn't count.
You sneak in undetected.
All right, that's been fast food talk. Bill, you watch anything? Craig, you watch anything?
Let's go with Bill.
You know, whenever I need something to watch and I'm sick of scrolling, I end up with a Daniel Craig James Bond movie. That's just how it is. And so I recently rewatched Spectre. And I think I've given this take before, the last time I rewatched Spectre. I think it's pretty good and should have been the last Craig movie because it ends, spoilers, with him driving off into the sunset, getting the girl, finishing his mission, and like being done and having his great Aston Martin rebuilt. And like it's a great send-off for the character. And then they went ahead and made No Time to Die, and which I think is the weakest of all the films. And it just makes Spectre look even better and how it should have ended. So you know, anyway, enjoyable movie. My rank continues to be Casino Royale, Skyfall, Spectre, Quantum, No Time to Die.
Literally no notes. No notes.
Thank you. Thank you.
And that's why we get along so well.
Truly. What have you watched?
I've watched A Wild Robot.
Wild Robot. Sigsy pick of the year.
I did.
Thoughts?
I mean, it was fantastic. Every single aspect of that movie was 10 out of 10. No notes. Watch Flow, so I can't be as angry as you are. But from like, dude, Sony Animation does some really good fucking shit. And they deserve more credit and accolades than they probably get.
Did you love the score? I feel like the music would have worked for you really well.
Dude, everything about that was truly incredible. Like the action, the pacing, the storyline, the whole like ethos behind it. The end was just like knife in heart, like just like,
Yep.
It was incredible. It was truly incredible. It reminded me, and like the anime, like talk about the animation style, but that other, what was the other Sony Animation movie that we all loved to?
Oh, the one with the family?
Yeah, and like the.
Oh, Mitchell and the Machines?
Yeah.
Mitchell versus the Machines?
Same style, same great like movie. Just really good writing, really good voice acting.
Yeah.
It's just really good. Oh, it was not. Incredible. I don't think it was. I'm sorry. I don't think Wild Robot was a Sony Animation.
It was a
DreamWorks.
It was a DreamWorks Universal. Yeah, I'm sorry.
Strike it.
Yeah, but same stylistically, not Pixar. Yeah, I think you know Pixar has its style, it has its lane. But to have cool animation films that aren't in that style in that realm, like Mitchell and the Machines, just it worked really well, and I really liked it a lot. So Craig,
nice.
You're the last one to watch it.
No, I did watch it. Craig already watched it.
He was kind of lukewarm on it.
But I think I just wasn't in the right. I don't know. I wasn't in the right frame of mind. I was being lazy. I did fall asleep in the middle of it. It's fine.
Oh, come on. All right.
I did enjoy it though. I didn't not enjoy it. But you know that thing when Bill really likes a movie and then you sort of just like reflexively take the other side? It's kind of like the cornerstone of this podcast. That's kind of like where I am on it.
Yeah. You got to be contrarian. No, it's fine.
Knock him down
a
few pegs.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Well, there's plenty more that I watched, AJ, but we have a massive Netflix and Bill segment coming up. So we will get to it.
Go right into the news?
Yeah, what's in the news?
While we're still in the aftermath of award season, the AV Club posted a list of the best movies this century that did not win a single award. Some standouts include Memento, Mulholland Drive, Royal Tenenbaums, Gangs of New York, True Grit, Nebraska, Lady Bird, and The Irishman. Bill, of that list, any you think got snubbed the hardest?
I feel like... I mean, I'm a Nolan guy. He's my boy. I'm always going to back Chris Nolan. The idea that Memento wouldn't win original screenplay, or actually, if it's adapted from a short story that his brother wrote, so I don't know if it would count as adapted. But anyway, a screenplay award for Memento not coming to fruition is crazy to me. That's such an original idea and such an amazing, amazing screenplay. So that one jumped out at me when I read this list. Gangs of New York also not winning anything. Like usually a period piece like that will get costumes, production design, something. Or you have Daniel Day-Lewis in an incredible role that as Bill the Butcher that deserves best actor. I mean, he deserves best actor every time he works. So the fact that that didn't end up getting anything is pretty crazy to me as well.
That was the only one on this list that really jumped out to me. I was like, they didn't win shit. They didn't even win like best fucking mutton chops, like nothing. Zero.
Yeah.
That's crazy. Yeah,
they actually did not win best mutton chops, Craig. That went to I can't even think of a joke.
that went to fucking Glory.
Air Bud 8 or Glory. Yep.
So I was surprised by some of the ones they listed.
Lady Bird, the Irishman was not the best of the best. True Grit was like out of all of that, Royal Tenenbaums and probably Gangs of New York stand out the most, being like, oh really? Like even Lady Bird, I'm a bit surprised that there was no nods or anything. But like, Memento's a weird film. Mulholland Drive is a really weird film. Like,
yeah,
it just seems like weird doesn't win.
Yeah. Well, some of these got nods for the record. Like, I think Gangs of New York at the time set the record for like most nominations with zero wins. Wow. It was one of those types of movies. Some of them got nominations, but just didn't take any hardware home. So, yeah, that was an interesting piece that popped up that definitely caught my eye when I saw some of the names on there.
AV Club's really in the slog of post-award season trying to now power-rank losers.
That's what they're trying to see. What do all these movies say about the awards season? I don't know, whatever they tried to spin it as, but I thought it was interesting.
The amount of people that have texted me in the last 2 weeks that are like, hey, Anora, good movie. Can't believe it won Best Picture. Like, I had several people reach out to me and be like, I don't see it. I don't see it at all.
Really? I've had a million people reach out to me, but they are more asking, should they see it? And like, what's it about? Or have you seen it? I haven't had anybody watch it and then react back to me. So I'm waiting for some of those messages.
I had a few people. And it kind of goes back to the vein that you had last week or last episode where you're like, hey, this is going to be a weird trivia question. That's like, what won Best Picture in 2025 X, Y, and Z? And it's going to be like Anora. Like, it's just one of those things where it's like, damn, like, is it truly Best Picture material?
Well, AJ, that kind of leads into our next news story.
Ooh.
In the wake of Anora winning Best Picture, Variety ran a story this week detailing the work that Neon did in campaigning for their film to win. They said that Neon spent, quote, $18 million on the marketing, distribution, and awards campaign for Anora. In other words, three times the budget of Sean Baker's movie itself, end quote. Previously, Neon won Best Picture for Parasite, where they spent $20 million on campaigning. Wow. AJ, how do you feel about a studio spending three times the budget of a movie to try to influence it getting a statue?
Well, there you go. This is the Harvey Weinstein Miramax effect. Mm-hmm. We talked about it a little bit a few episodes ago, but Harvey Weinstein notoriously spent like $1 trillion on marketing and persuading the Academy to have Shakespeare in Love win Best Picture. Which everyone was like, what?
Right.
Bill, we talk about it all the time.
Because it beat out Saving Private Ryan.
Yep. Beat out Saving Private Ryan. When I heard this, I felt a little icky about it. Because in the same conversations that people have been asking me, and now on reflection, it's like, is this Best Picture material? Truly, like, you think of all the greats that didn't win, basically all of Martin Scorsese's entire catalog, Tarantino's entire catalog. Like, you put this up against some of the best films that have ever been created, and now it sits above most of those. And it makes you kind of wonder, like, are awards or this award truly coveted and truly deserved? Or is Hollywood just a sucker for being wined and dined and sent things and, you know, just persuaded and bullied to kind of win something? It sucks, to be honest with you. Like, it sucks to have this come to light, especially with a small indie movie. And Sean talked about the magic of cinema and this small, scrappy crew that worked really hard. And I'm not doubting that. You know, I've seen behind the scenes. I watched a great YouTube video with the DP on that and kind of how they worked and how scrappy they were. And that's fine. But like, for then the studio to turn around and say like, hey, we can win this if we, you know, dig deep and really try to buy it. It's just fucking shitty, man.
I mean, it's one of those things where like you wish that it's for the same reason you wish there wasn't money in politics. Like, as soon as it gets involved, it kind of skews things a bit. I mean, this is standard operating procedure. This is not something that Anora has invented. This has just been around. It's just, it's a shame. I mean, when you look at the way the Academy votes, all the Academy members are in different classes, categories based on what their role is. So, you know, the cinematographers vote for cinematography, the writers vote for writers, but then everybody votes for Best Picture. So you have a much bigger pool of thousands of people to influence. And you get some stuff like this. I mean, to your point about this movie ranking among the greats, I feel like that prestige of the award has dwindled over the years. I mean, after a movie like Crash winning, it really it knocks you down a peg and you realize, okay, this best picture is not exactly what we would like it to be in our minds. It is just an of the moment thing every year. So I have to take all these awards now with a grain of salt after kind of seeing some of these winners over my lifetime. So that is a bummer for sure. And if you try to think of it big picture against all these other movies in history, then yeah, of course it's going to be disappointing. But yeah, even so, it was surprising to me when I read just how much they spent on it compared to the film itself. Like, that disparity is what makes this stand out the most to me.
Insane. And then, you know, on the flip side, you know, the Parasite thing. Oh, sorry, Craig. I'll get to you in 2 seconds. The Parasite thing, like, that deserved Best Picture. Like, Parasite is a film that still is, like, in my mind. That's, like, the layers of just storytelling, like, metaphors, motifs, like, disparity in wealth. Like, all of those things put together. And the fact that it was a foreign film, not in English, that just... Actually, here's a funny story. You want to know when I watched Parasite?
When did you watch Parasite?
The day after Craig Stanton's 30th birthday party, and I was just fucking in shambles with a bucket next to my bed till like 4:30 in the afternoon, just praying to whatever God would just kill me. And I was like, you know what? I think I'm going to watch Parasite. And now those two things are connected in my mind.
Indelibly.
Thank you, Craig.
But you're saying that the money spent on Parasite was worth it because it got a movie that was worthy of Best Picture to win Best Picture. But now we have a movie like Anora that may not be worthy and the money is too much. That's what gets tricky. I feel like it can be film depending.
The only thing different about Parasite was that it was a foreign film, right? And probably like Anora, limited markets. But like foreign films, I feel like probably when they get to that stage of like, hey, we're going to get a nomination, you kind of have to put some more stuff in the world being like, I want you to see this movie and see how great it is. And right, without like a wide release, you know, especially a non-English film, I think you got to probably do a little bit more marketing to get people on board. Craig, yeah, hand up.
Here's my take on this situation. I think it's fine,
baby.
And I think everyone needs to fucking grow up and understand.
Oh, cool. That marketing. All right, on to Should I Go See It. The first movie we'll be talking about this week is apparently
Here's the thing. From what I understand, the Weinstein Miramax move was much more about straightforward bribery and also like dirty tactics of like trashing the opposition films like in the press and sort of like just being big shock here, being a big piece of shit.
Saving Private Ryan?
He did it in the press. He said that the film went downhill after the opening scene is what he said.
Wow.
But anyways, I haven't seen anything in this like Anora story, which the story itself feels to me like someone fucking talking to some journalist and like leaking some shit because they got sour grapes because they didn't fucking win. But that's just my speculation. But there's nothing I'm seeing in the actual nature of like the quote marketing budget unquote that's like bad. Like they did like a pop-up in LA where they sold thongs and stuff. They did like cool shit to like drum up fucking buzz for their movie. And it's fucking cool, man. Like, that's the marketing budget. Do it. People, this is not a problem. We got a lot of problems in the world. Anora having a marketing budget that was like three times the budget of the film itself. Also, sorry for making a film for not a lot of money. Jeez. Apologies. Like, what the fuck?
This is coming in on time and under budget.
Yeah. Grow up.
Yeah.
That's what I say.
Okay.
All right. Grow up. Okay. Final word.
Well, I should gag myself one of those Anora thongs and stop talking. So, Should I Go See It this week? We have two films, Novocaine and The Black Bag. Bill, I lost my window, but here it is. Novocaine, according to IMDb.com, when the girl of his dreams is kidnapped, a man incapable of feeling physical pain turns his rare condition into an unexpected advantage in the fight to rescue her. Bill, Should I Go See It?
Yes. It is a yes for me. It's a very clever action comedy, and I enjoyed it thoroughly. I was very entertained.
Okay.
You have Jack Quaid, man of the hour, man of the moment. Jack Quaid everywhere right now.
He's in it right now.
Jack Quaid, also quick Nepo baby check.
Yes.
Fuck.
Very much.
Yeah.
Okay. I might be the only person who didn't know that, but sorry. Carry on.
Okay. So he plays a character named Nathan Kane, who has a nervous system disorder where he cannot feel pain. So because of that, he gets the nickname Novocaine. There you go. There's the poster for you. So the movie opens. He works at a bank. He is, you know, they do a little montage of his life, and he is lonely and perennially single and all that. He finally meets a girl, co-worker. She rocks his world. He's a new man, all that good stuff. Then the bank gets robbed and she gets taken hostage. And so now Nathan Kane decides he's going to have to be the one to get her back, and he's going to kill his way to the top to do it. That's your premise. And then all the action sequences are unique because they're built to maximize this premise, including a lot of gory, gross-out moments, but our hero doesn't react to them because he doesn't feel anything. So there's like, you know, there's the dissonance between the heinous shit that's happening to him and him just kind of like not even noticing. And okay. So they do a nice job kind of building that into the fight choreography and all that stuff. So I think they use the concept pretty well. It isn't really as laugh out loud funny as it thinks it is, especially with some of the, you know, banter. And maybe the movie's like too long by 10 minutes. But overall, I was entertained. I thought it was clever. I thought it was fun. All the performances were good. I don't think I'd ever really need to watch it again, but it's kind of a cool word of mouth type of movie that people might like stumble upon in the future and tell their friends about. So yeah, I enjoyed it. I gave it a yes.
Let's rate the action. We talking like John Wick level? We talking?
No. Like
Fast and the Furious level? Like what? Like how well is this put together from a fight choreography standpoint?
I wouldn't go as high as John Wick. I would probably put it closer to Atomic Blonde, maybe.
Okay.
It's like it tries to do that, but with this comedic element and the kind of the gory element. And so, yeah, it's not as polished as those things, but it strives for that. And there's a couple nice moments that are close to it. But yeah, I would say it's kind of like, you know, second or third tier compared to John Wick, but it definitely apes that style in terms of the cutting and the way they sell the hits and things like that.
I would assume, or I would think that 2 hours of sight gag, self-inflicted gore might get old after a while. Does it?
Yeah, that I do think it is a little long. There's definitely a couple like false ending type of moments that kind of annoyed me, but. No, I didn't think the action, I think they did a nice job with the action in terms of every different action set piece was unique. It wasn't like they didn't reuse any bits. They didn't reuse any types of things. So I thought they did a really nice job varying that up. So the action was good. It was just a matter of some of the plot elements. They kind of dragged out a little bit more than they needed to, is kind of what made the length a problem. But again, not enough of a problem that I would say don't bother. Like I was entertained throughout. Just looking back on it, they definitely could have tightened it up.
Interesting. Yeah, I don't know. I mean, I saw the trailer. I mean, it looks fine. It definitely, to me, seems more like a streamer rather than like a get off the couch and head down to your local Cineplex to watch it.
Sure. That's where most people, I think, will find it.
Yeah, anything that could have been done better, like how is Jack Quaid's performance? Now that I see him, every time I think of him, I just think of Huey and the boys. Yeah. Like, how was that?
So he is definitely like Huey and the Boys. Like he is, for right now, it feels like every time I've seen him, he's been kind of one note. He's got kind of the same shtick.
Yeah,
but he is doing a nice job finding projects that fit that. And so in this case, he's supposed to be playing kind of the like nerdy, anxious guy, which is what he does. He's kind of neurotic. And his character is built to be that. And he gets thrust into a world that he doesn't understand and is not prepared for. And he has to react to it. So I think the project fits his style. If you're already sick of that style, then sure, I get it. But no, I thought he did really well. I thought all the acting in it was pretty solid. They also have a nice surprise was one of the detectives that is also working the case. There's a sort of a subplot where you follow the detectives that are following him is played by the same actor from Veep, who's like one of her assistants. I don't know his name. Not Tony Hale, but
Matt Walsh.
Yes. Yes. That's it.
Mustache guy. Yeah. He's hilarious.
Yeah. Comms director. McClintock.
Yes.
Yeah.
So he is one of the detectives that's kind of following along in the wake of all these action sequences that are happening. And he's He's great. He's always funny. So that was nice.
All right. So overall, solid B, B minus?
Yes, I was about to say B, B minus for sure.
B, B minus. Okay. Let's go on to, speaking of the letter B, black bag. That's two yep. B's for
Whoa,
those paying attention.
Black bag.
Paying attention at home. Black bag, according to IMDb.com, when intelligence agent Catherine Woodhouse is suspected of betraying the nation, her husband, also a legendary agent, faces the ultimate test of whether to be loyal to his marriage or his country. This is like Mr. and Mrs. Smith. Okay, Bill, should I go see it?
Yes. If that last movie was like a BB minus, this is like an AA minus. This is
whoa. Well, you got two
fantastic
powerhouses.
Movie.
You got the Fast, and you got Cate Blanchett. I mean,
oh,
come on,
unbelievable.
Directed by Steven Soderbergh, who is consummate professional, always puts out good work. So him re-teaming with Fassbender, they did the movie Haywire together. If you have not seen Haywire, quick aside, phenomenal movie. There's an action sequence in there where Fassbender fights the lead in it, and it's one of my favorite action sequences of the last, I don't even know how long. So Haywire, quick plug for that movie. Anyway, so yeah, stars Fassbender, also starring Cate Blanchett. There's also a small role for Pierce Brosnan. They also have a bunch of great younger actors, including the actress that played Moneypenny in the Craig James Bond movies. And the guy from the Netflix show Bridgerton, that a lot of people wanted to play James Bond, he's in this, and he's very good.
Say his name, Bill. Say his name.
Pronounce his name.
I don't know it, and I wouldn't be able to pronounce it if I did. I just know it's French.
Roger Jean Page? Oui, yeah. Oui.
There you go. I'll leave that to you.
Okay, cool.
He's in it. He's good. So, yeah, great cast. That's one thing to note.
Hey, rumored to be cast as the they're rebooting the Beauty and the Beast movie. He's going to play the Candlestick.
Ooh.
Kidding.
Are they?
Joke.
Nice.
That was a French joke. That was a French joke.
Okay, now I get it.
Fucking uncultured swines.
Okay,
keep going, Bill.
So the premise for this movie, there's a bad thing, you know, there's always a MacGuffin. That's like the rabbit's foot in Mission Impossible 3. There's a bad thing out there called Severus, and now it's in the open. And so, you know, an informant tells Fassbender that the leak could have come from any handful of people, and one of those people is his wife, who is also a spy. So the whole movie, we're following him as he tries to track down what happened, and we kind of see him navigate and investigate his own wife, who's also a master spy. So he knows that she knows, and, like, there's all that stuff. AJ, you have a question?
Right off the bat, I was going to interrupt you because I feel like this is a very important piece of information.
Uh-huh.
Do they know each other are spies, or is it like a Mr. and Mrs. Smith where, like, they don't know until, like, they're like have a meet cute where it's like, holy shit, you're a spy too?
No. They very much know they're spies. They work in the same office, but they are working on different things. So if someone asks them, like, what are you doing this weekend or where are you traveling to for this week? They'll say, it's black bag. I can't tell you. So they will still keep their, like, missions separate and they just use the catch-all of black bag. Can't say.
Okay.
But they both know they are spies. They both work together, yes.
Okay.
But because of that, you not only have your standard espionage stuff and, like, a lot of great dialogue and subtext, there's also stuff kind of leaning into the marriage and relationship side of things that's really great. So it's layered. It's a tight 90 minutes. It's like, just a slick, smart movie. The directing from Soderbergh, nothing too showy, just like strong craft on display as usual. The script's got some twists and turns. Fassbender is one of my favorite actors working today. Like, a movie where you just watch him think, it's just like one of my favorite things. So I was grinning ear to ear the entire movie. I was giddy. I loved it. Yeah, it's easy to follow, but it still makes you think. It's not like spoon-fed to you, but it's also not super withholding or ambiguous. It's just fantastic. It's just a fantastic watch. I loved it.
I love that. I love spy movies. I love both of those people. I think Cate Blanchett and Michael Fassbender, two of the best in the biz today. Here's a little math game, Bill. Not doing too hot in the theaters right now. Could estimate a budget of $50 million.
I have something to say about that.
Okay, Craig, interrupt me again.
Can I speak on the success? Speaking of marketing budgets,
sure.
Tonight is the first time I've heard of this movie. And I'm a fan of Cate Blanchett. I'm a fan of Michael Fassbender. And I'm a fan of Steven Soderbergh. Hello?
Yeah.
Marketing department.
I mean,
non-existent.
Why have I not heard of this movie?
50 mil gross worldwide of today is at 12. So they're going to take a fucking bath. Why is that?
Yeah.
Should have sold thongs at and fucking Montrose Avenue in LA.
I would have bought Cate Blanchett's earrings.
It's hard. It is unfortunately.
See what I did there?
It is unfortunately hard to sell. I don't know. Maybe it's hard to sell, or they don't want to spend the money to try to sell a 90-minute talky thriller. I don't know.
It's a focus feature, isn't it? NBC Universal. So it's probably going to be on Peacock sooner than later for those who want a probably good date night movie. Would you say it's a good date night movie, Bill?
Yeah, I actually mentioned that to Caroline when I got out. I was like, I wish you had watched it with me because I think the relationship element in the movie like adds that extra layer that makes it a little more interesting than, you know, I think a lot of people assume that if it's a spy movie, it's a quote unquote guy movie. And that's not always the case.
Interesting. One last thing before we move on, a little piece of trivia. Lead actress Cate Blanchett agreed to star in this picture without even reading the script. Her agent said, we got a movie for you. She said, who am I playing and who's it directed by? And she said, I'm in. That's all I need to know.
Fascinating.
Everybody loves to work with Steven Soderbergh. All right. Okay, Bill, Netflix and Bill.
Yeah.
That's your name.
Oh, my God.
This is your segment.
So much.
You
so
are
much
watching
to talk about.
Too much TV. Have you showered and eaten lately?
Barely. I'm barely keeping it together.
Same hoodie as last week. Same crimson 60 hoodie as last week.
I've actually been sitting here the entire time.
Which you can get on our merch store. Redbubble.com/60.
Just go to shouldigosee.com and click the merch link.
Okay.
Yeah, I've been watching a lot of TV. This is weird for me. Normally, I lean into movies basically only, and then there's maybe a show on for me to watch. But right now, there's like three or four concurrent weekly shows that I got to get into. I want to start with Invincible. The season finale of Invincible was this past week. It's an animated superhero show on Amazon. And while it is animated, it is aimed at adults. It is very violent. And this season finale is one of the best episodes of TV I've ever seen.
Whoa.
It's like rated on IMDb as like a 9.9. It's like up there with some of the best episodes of Breaking Bad. I've watched it, I think, three times since it came out this past Thursday. It is so, so good. So if anyone's not on the Invincible train, which you got to be by now for people that aren't or are on the fence, like you have to watch this show. And this finale is one of the reasons. It's just so, 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 so good.
It truly has almost a perfect score on IMDb right now with 61,000 ratings at a 9.9.
I'm telling you. Maybe I'll watch that tonight again. It's so good. So, yeah, Invincible, can't say enough about it. Now, to be fair, the show overall ebbs and flows. Some seasons are better than others. Some episodes feel a little too long and they focus on subplots I don't care as much about. This show's not perfect, but this episode is, and it just knocked my socks off. So, big fan.
I thought so you that's were having Invincible. Some mixed thoughts about that TV show.
That's what I'm saying. This season, there were definitely some episodes that kind of dragged and covered some stuff I didn't really care about. There's a lot. By now in the show, there's just a lot of characters, a lot of subplots. There's a lot of material from these comic books that they're pulling from. And some episodes I kind of feel like were a waste of time. So yeah, it's again, not a perfect show. But this finale, oh man, it makes up for all that and more and is a perfect episode. So highly, highly recommend Invincible if you're at all interested.
Okay.
The other Amazon show is Reacher. This season has been significantly better than season two. I still necessarily wouldn't put it with season one. A couple episodes left, but that I think we'll be talking about the finale on that one next episode. But still watching it weekly, still enjoying it.
Love it. I still haven't watched White Lotus. Episode. I just watch him work
out. I think you would like Reacher.
Yeah,
I think you would like it.
Okay.
And then, well, I'll hand it over to you after this one. White Lotus, update on that. This season has been okay, a little on the slower side, but the show's not really about plot anyway. It's more about just the vibe and just watching these characters and listening to this great dialogue and this great acting. But this most recent episode was very, very good, and like things are starting to come together for these last couple. So I'm pretty happy with this season of White Lotus so far as well.
Parker Posey has, like, she's, like, entered the next stage of her career. She was on the Today Show. She's been getting so much press. I've heard just amazing things about her performance on that show.
She's very good. I mean, everyone's very good. Walton Goggins, especially, he's one of my favorite actors. Carrie Coon is one of the best actresses working. I mean, everybody in it's very, very good. That's really the draw of these seasons of this show, is to just see all these fantastic actors in one place. So, yeah, it's starting to heat up. It's starting to get good after this past week. So I like it.
Love it. I'm still watching. So here's the deal. I'm lacking in the Daredevil department. So we're both watching Daredevil. I only watched the first episode, so I am a little behind on episodes two and three,
and then tonight will be, as of this recording, will be four. Yeah.
Okay, so I'm a few behind, but I will get caught up, I promise. And then
it's good.
I don't know.
I watched that as well. It's very good.
Okay, so we're heating up. Craig dropped up out of the chat, so I don't know where he went. So we're gonna finish the rest of the episode without Craig. So whatever, dude.
We're moving on.
I have a confession to make.
What?
I fell asleep during last week's Severance episode.
Oh boy. I wish Craig was here, because I am now caught up on Severance, folks. I did it. I'm now with you boys watching Severance week to week. So I am caught up and I have lots of thoughts.
Okay, share your thoughts. So, what do you think so far? Okay, so I told you that you should watch the finale of one before you go into two. Did you do
Correct.
That?
And I did.
How do you feel? So you did. Okay. What are your thoughts so far?
Thank you for that recommendation. Great transition to rewatch the finale, try to get caught up.
You're welcome.
Go right into two. I think what I've always thought about the show in terms of the production, the acting, my goodness, absolutely phenomenal. I love all that. And there are a lot of really interesting plots happening. My only thing is I'm really waiting to see how well they stick the landing for this season, because the season definitely has opened up itself to become much more of a puzzle box show than I kind of anticipated. I kind of liked, on reflection, the more bottled episode, you know, the bottled nature of season one, where you're kind of just like in the office together all the time trying to figure it out. Now they've expanded and added so many ideas. I'm kind of curious what they do with them, and I hope that they don't lose some of those threads, but it's a wait and see situation. So, I mean, we'll see.
Yeah, I feel like the things are bubbling to the surface on a whole bunch of different things. And to your point, it's really hard to stick the landing on one storyline, one good storyline, but to do it concurrently across three, four very important storylines, and then keep the viewers invested to the next season as like a rollover, is very hard to do. But if there's one show that can probably do it, it's this one. This week will be the season finale. It's been leaked, or Ben Stiller told the press that it's going to be almost an 80-minute finale. So hopefully that gives enough time to get things somewhat wrapped up, or at least, you know, get everyone launched and hyped for season three, if there is one. Yeah. I don't even know if they've renewed it.
I think I heard that they already lit three, definitely. I thought I heard they lit greenlit four, but maybe that could be Reacher. I could be misremembering that. But I'm almost positive Severance is definitely getting another season already. Confirmed.
Wild. Well, Craig's got some technical difficulties. We still can't hear him, so we're going to go live back to Bill in the studio. Bill, what else have you been watching? It seems that the last thing on the list is Celtics City, the old Parquet Boys. Parquet.
Yes. So Celtic City is a weekly release. It is an HBO docu-series about the Boston Celtics, your world champion Boston Celtics. And I am enjoying it thoroughly. HBO docs, I mean, they know what they're doing. They're professionals over there. Great archival footage, great interviews. I'm really excited because the first couple episodes are very origin of the Celtics, a lot of time on Bill Russell, a lot of time on Red Auerbach. And that type of stuff is great, but I've also already seen like a multi-part documentary on Bill Russell. I've been hearing these stories my entire life. And so it's kind of like, all right, but like I get that. So now this most recent episode, they get up to the point of like post-Bill Russell, get into like Tommy Heinsohn running the team. And then it ends with like the drafting of Larry Bird, which is super awesome. So now we're getting into like a little more, slightly more modern stuff with the series, and I'm really excited for when they get into some of the stuff that I was alive and watching for, so I can get more behind the scenes of some of that from when I was a kid. So yeah, it's a little slower those first couple episodes, but now it's starting to heat up, and I really, really enjoyed this last one. So Celtic City is Mondays on HBO. Big fan.
How many parts is this? This seems like a lot of
parts. I don't know. I have no idea. So, I mean, it's got to be... This was the third episode, I believe, and they got to Larry Bird, so you got to think that there's, I don't know, two or three, four more, depending on how much time they take with Bird and then Pierce and then... And then the in-between squads and then our current squad. Like, there's some ground to cover, so we'll see.
Love it. Craig, still off the mic? Okay, here we go. What do you got tickets for? Now, he can't even do the tickets voice.
He can't get the tickets.
Tickets here, guys. I got your fucking tickets. I can't do it like him. What are you going to watch?
I have a ticket to, you're going to love this one, AJ, the live-action Snow White film.
Bro, what is going on with this movie?
I feel like I have to see it. I have to. I saw the live Little Mermaid. I saw the live Beauty and the Beast. I saw the live Aladdin. I saw the quote-unquote live Lion King. So Snow White, I got to see it. I got to get the review up. And I'm not looking forward to it, to be honest. But we'll give it a shot.
Yeah, so for those who don't know, there is a lot of... the internet's favorite term, backlash, going on right now. So Rachel Zegler, backlash with her. She apparently was trashing the original Snow White movie, and a couple other things came to light a while ago that are resurfacing, and people are pissed about that. And then Gal Gadot is getting a little bit of backlash as well for her remarks with Gaza and the Palestinians and with Israel. So everyone's mad at everyone who's in that film. And I saw a few things on X Trending where people were sending screenshots of like their local AMC theater, like pick a seat. And it was like wide open availability from now until the end of time. So...
Oh, yeah. When I got my ticket, there was plenty of availability. This movie is not going to do well. Disney's going to end up... losing their shirt on it, but...
And it's Disney. It's not like they're going to pull it off the shelf and get the tax, you know, break on it, but like...
No, they gotta see it through. They're in too deep. So that's the only ticket I have outstanding. We'll see what else is coming out in the next couple months, and then May, June, July, obviously things ramp up when we get into summer blockbusters and all that fun stuff. So right now we're still kind of riding through the Ides of March.
I was going to ask, any summer blockbusters you get your eyes on?
Mission Impossible. Oh, well, that's the be all end all. That's what I'm living for.
Oh wow. Okay. Cool. Take us away, so you don't commit seppuku.
Thank you for listening to the Should I Go See It podcast. Please make sure to follow on Instagram @ Should I Go See It.